Down with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! We are a minute past the hour. It is the 25th day of September 2014. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That is where you go if you'd like to jump into the chat room, which I'm doing in just a moment here as soon as the electronic computer machine box decides to cooperate. It's rather old and tired, you know. But I'll be there. Others, I presume, will be there as well. Yes, it took a minute, but yeah, others will be wandering by in short order. Good evening, Paul. The moderators will be by in a little bit. You can also go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com to access the listen live aspect of the program. That's the easiest way to go and get the White Rose Society stream that powers all of this. Of course, if you like to listen by podcast, the podcast is available at whiterosesociety.org under the subdomain for this program. If you're listening on an iDevice or a smart this or something that's bent up in your pocket, talk about bent out of shape. Well, we recommend the apps from Stitcher and TuneIn and WhoTunes. They all work equally well. A gentle reminder attaches to that, however, if you should see or hear any advertisements on those apps, please understand they do not go toward the support of The Horn. The Horn doesn't have any advertising support. The Horn is a non-commercial, non-capitalist, community-based entity that relies upon the people who share the precious, finite time of their existence in an ongoing conversation that has been ongoing for, yea, verily, something on the order of 10 years. More than 10 years, really. Come October, it will be our 9th online-only anniversary. And that's rather a long time, dadgummit. And it stands as a testament to the determination of those who have built and maintain this community. Oh, hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. And let's see. We try to raise $150 on any given evening. Some nights we are more successful than others. Last night, the night before, have been the of the less successful variety. And that's a tough nut to crack. Because the fact of the matter is, we have bills that have to be paid if we want to continue to have this. There are bills. Well, we try to raise $3,500 a month. And in the last half of September, and some carry over, and because we had kind of a boogery start with bandwidth issues at the beginning of the month, we've tried to keep even. But there are bills that have to be paid, and frankly, they are bills related to the existential continuation of this broadcast effort. So we're in a hole this evening. I'm trying to figure how much of a hole. It's at least $300. But the... Thank you, Waggy. Liberal talker cracks tough nuts! News at 11. But the fact of the matter is, we've got about $2,000 in bills that are due by the end of the month. Some of that is related to the technological changeover that attached to shifting bandwidth services. I mean, the fact of the matter is, we went from unlimited crappy bandwidth to really awesome metered bandwidth, and that comes at a cost. And so, like I said, by the end of the, you know, by the end of the month, we need to be getting near the $2,000 mark. End of the month, start of the month, what have you. And toward that end, we have two challenges on the table this evening. And these things serve as a reminder to everyone, for everyone, that this isn't just, you know, this is an effort that means a lot to a lot of people. Dr. John, the intrepid Dr. John, has offered up a match of the first $50 that come in. The first $50 have to come in, however, in order for that to work. And following that, assuming we can meet Dr. John's challenge, then Steve has a $25 challenge that will follow that. So we could raise $150 of the whole quite quickly with a response to those two challenges, and then hopefully keep on going. I wish it were otherwise. I wish I was independently wealthy. Nobody, these conversations would never take place. Hell. I wish I was screw independently wealthy, just able to have the disposable income to run all this and would all just enjoy it and none of this would ever get mentioned. But none of those factors apply. And we are, of course, doing progressive radio. So that means that there are no big foundation checks coming our way. We're not like Flush Flimball, who was able to suck at the Heritage Foundation teat for decades on end, assuming that he's stopped said suckling. No, just not. You know, if you do this right wing stuff, there's no end of the money that's available. This foundation and that institute and yeah. But on the left, nope, it ain't there. And if somebody should happen to come along from some right, left-wing alleged think tank, you know, here's $1.50. We're happy to support you. Make sure we get a year-end accounting of all the paper clips you bought. Carol pointing out, you know, it's pretty sad when I'm broker than the horn. But when I hit the lottery, though, you bitches are first in line. Oh, indeed. Thank you. Thank you, Carol. I needed a laugh because it hadn't been very funny for the last few days. Thanks, Ron. Thank you, Ron, very kindly. Ron up in Ottawa. Ottawa? Really? Ron up in Ottawa has just answered half of Dr. John's challenge, which means that we've $25 to go on that and then $25 to go on Steve's. And we will be, you know, along the way. Crossing my fingers. If you want to participate by means of the U.S. Postal Service traditional mail, that address, of course, is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. And just remember, there are a lot of people, who can't, but who do share of their time, and their passions, and their ideas. And so, being that this is a community, we are all acting in each other's behalf. So that's kind of neat. If you use the Postal Service route, by all means, drop me an email, bobkincaid@gmail.com, or holler at me over on the Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, or on Facebook at Bob Kincaid, or, you know, at Bob Kincaid on Twitter. Just let me know so I can give a heads up to Boss Man Wayne. Got Ron pointing out, yep, we got internet up here and everything in Ottawa. Just doing my part to support the hillbilly diaspora. You know, a little bicarbonate of soda will clear up that diaspora. Mm-hmm. I think I had a bad dose of diaspora the other day when I got the wrong kind of chicken wings. Yeah, Carol's right. Carol pointing out in the chat room, the left is too busy feeding people and housing people. That's why there are no billion-dollar foundations for truth radio. And that is the absolute truth. It could be a conversational topic on its own. And it's deliberate. What I mean by it's deliberate is when Republicans have gotten in power and have managed to gut things like social programs. And I remember reading a fascinating article about this years ago. The leftish groups turned around to pick up the slack. Housing support, food support, necessities of life support, and things like information and journalism, well, they took a bath. Or got drowned in it. Wow. Thank you very, very kindly to an anonymous contributor. Both Dr. John and Steve's challenges have been met. That's magnificent news. And thank you. Thank you to Kate. You know, it's Kate who first started saying years ago that one of these days folks are going to tune in and there just ain't going to be nothing there. And I hate it that we get close to that and we push up against that and we dangle our little toes over the edge of that, but it's a fact. We don't have an annual operating budget. We operate from month to month. And yeah, I crack jokes about Agnes's masseur and the cabana boy and the spinning rims for the Maybach and the hangar rent for the Gulfstream 5. But that's all that is a joke. What we're talking about here is maintaining an. Do you think the fundraising goal for this program would be $150 if we were living large? It wouldn't be. I've got me an email box, and on any given day there are a few leftish, liberalish, progressive organizations, and I get these emails. We're trying to finish out our fundraising goal of $25,000. Can you help? And you think, yeah, I'd love to. But then what's fascinating is that those sites that are trying to get those $25,000, those are text sites that mostly just relink other work. On the other hand, I checked it out one time, and it runs to about 20 pages per hour of if you were to print out what we do here and publish it. So that's 60 pages a night. Can you imagine? Can you imagine 60 pages of wow. Kate noting that her contribution is for the sisters who can't afford it. And also in celebration of Attorney General Eric Holder's resignation. Note coming in from Randy with what I said about left-leaning organizations stepping up to try to fill in the gaps for things like food and medical access and all noble undertakings, Randy pointing out. And that's when the right wing cut the food and housing benefits even more. Well, sure. Drove us right out of the playing field. But hopefully things will improve over the course of the evening. I'm sorry. I'm deeply sorry that it works out like this, but it just does. And we're trying to get things squared away. You know, there are technical things out there. I'm talking about things that we have not brought in line that we'd like to. Like a way for instance, for Bill to be able to participate in Friday in the Front Porch. There's a way to do that. There's a gizmo out there. But it's a $700 undertaking to put that thing in line so that we can have a telephone caller on a traditional telephone participating in Friday on the Front Porch. So I just want to make this as comprehensible as possible. But this is Thorn in the Side Thursday. And holy mackerel, we've got, it feels like it's not a crown of thorns since it's in the side. It's more like a corset of thorns. That sounds kinky, doesn't it? But they're really out there. I had thought to start just because it was such a daggum good time. I had thought to start with something I noticed a couple of nights ago and posted over on my Facebook page. And it has to do with the way that the for-profit media likes to try to engage people in their coming coverage or what have you. And you see it all across the country. It's not limited to this one particular station, although this one particular station seems to have done a real bang-up job screwing this up. It comes out of Western Virginia. And it's a doozy. It's one of those poll questions. And it's a classic. The question being, honest to God, I'm trying to find it right now. Sometimes Facebook is entirely uncooperative. No, you're not it. Oh, let's just, never mind. Hold on, let's do it this way. Because this really is for the ages. The question itself is dumb enough, but the responses are precious. There it is, via WCYB television. This is just a Lulu. WCYB-TV serves the media market known as the Tri-Cities, which are roughly Bristol, Tennessee, and Virginia, Kingsport, Tennessee, and Johnson City, Tennessee. And they have this thing, because I'm sure they've got somebody who is in charge of social media, and they come up with a question of the day. And this past Tuesday, September the 23rd, their question of the day was, do you believe that climate change is a serious problem? And if so, what needs to be done about it? You can tell from the phrasing of the question that we're in for a bit of a wild ride. Because if you're asking a serious question about the nature of climate change, you do not use that most dangerous of all words in the English language, believe, in phrasing it. But they're serving a media market, WCYB is. They're serving a media market that is in the, not the buckle, but more like the frayed, tattered, beat your family end of the Bible Belt. Yeah. They serve a media market that reaches into a portion of Virginia where half of an entire county is just gone and has been blown away never to return in the relentless search for corporate profits and, 6 to 9 inch seams of coal that can be gotten at by wee tiny little handfuls of human beings operating gigantic machinery. I'm talking about Wise County, Virginia. Wise County, Virginia, where in August of 2004, a mountaintop removal company that was building a road there was shoving crap over the side of the hills that was getting in the way of their profits, and shoved one particular boulder, which, being a boulder, did what boulders do, and rolled and rolled and rolled until it came to rest in the bed of a 3-year-old little fella by the name of Jeremy Davidson and crushed him to death. The Commonwealth of Virginia had available to it a fine structure that allowed them to fine the coal company, I believe, the princely ransom of $15,000. For killing 3-year-old Jeremy Davidson, which they attempted to do, but the coal company appealed the fine. You would think this might be enough to make people around there look up and say, hey, I'll bet that those companies aren't our friends. They're poisoning our water, they're poisoning our air, they're destroying our land, taking away our heritage, ruining ancestral hunting grounds that we've been on for generations upon generations, and some of our forebears even much longer than that. Yeah, but no. No. Because WCYB is most likely concerned. If nothing else, they've got advertisers, because that part of Tennessee also gets mountaintop removal done in it. And so they're not going to go out of the way to ask hard questions. And when they do even ask a controversial one, they phrase it in terms of whether or not one believes something, like whether or not one believes in a religion, or whether or not one believes someone loves one, or whether one believes that with every drop of rain that falls, a flower grows. How would you, if you were phrasing that question on behalf of WCYB, how would you phrase it? Do you believe that climate change is a serious problem, and if so, what needs to be done about it? Well, here, let's take the obvious approach. Is climate change a serious problem? If it is, what needs to be done about it? There. We've taken the most dangerous word in the English language right out of the equation. But no, No. Of course not. It's phrased in terms of belief. And sweet Jesus, there were 159 comments. And God knows that the aggregate IQs of some of the people answering the questions didn't rise above the three-digit mark. Some of the answers didn't rise above room temperature. Some of the answers didn't rise above freezing. Bless his heart. One of my friends on Facebook, Nexus Mind Warped America, said, "Right, please stop mixing your god bollocks with the serious issue of human effing survival. You pious idiots do not belong anywhere near this debate." FFS. Then we okay. So we've got our thought experiment of how would you phrase the question, and we have an entry from Carol. Here's how I'd phrase it, Carol says. "How fucking stupid are you, and what are you doing to make sure your kids will survive to see their own grandchildren?" See, I like that too. But that might piss off the advertisers, you know, the friends of coal who buy ads and put on festivals and things like that. Carol pointing out, climate change is only a serious problem if you consider breathing important. If you think clean water is, you know, kind of important. Jesus ain't riding in on no dinosaur to save us. Glory! And Jesus is right where they went. Teresa said, "I believe," see, she was given her cue by the question, "I believe that God is in control of the climate." And then there was a critter. Name of Emily. Who was taken to task for the whole, you know, God's in charge of the climate business. And she said, "Evidence is all around. How can you deny the beautiful skies, mountains, seas, so on and so on?" Really, we're listing natural world evidence for the existence of God, and you get past skies, mountains, and seas, and suddenly you're into so on and so on. Not so much as a goddamn redwood. So on and so on, and not believe a big, powerful God made such a wonderful masterpiece. And let's not forget humans. I know I did not come from a stupid ape like scientists want us to think. Almighty God created us, period. Plus, if you read the Bible, you would know they are finding artifacts that prove the Bible is real. They just recently found bones to prove the story of David and Goliath from the Bible. Oh, Dr. John, I kind of hope you're busy right now and you're not listening. Because if you are listening, Dr. John, you just kicked a table leg out from under the table. They just recently found bones to prove the story of David and Goliath from the Bible. Honey, I'd go into hiding if I were you, because they're liable to come for you and think you're the jawbone of an ass. Whew. My particularly favorite line, though, was that I know I did not come from a stupid ape. I agree. She did not come from a stupid... She came from a really stupid ape. Like one that slipped on a banana peel and fell out of the tree and it right on the noggin. Okay. Carol's banging on all eight tonight. Might be, I noticed on her Facebook page, she got to tool around in a classic Corvette Stingray today. Yours for the low Kmart price of like $78,000. What fun. But I think she's all full of herself. She says, if I gouge the bitch's eyes out, does she still feel all Jesus-y? No more vistas, lady! Yeah.
Do you believe? Believe. All we have to do is believe.
Marty pointing out, you know, Bob, I don't think Teresa's response reflects an IQ much above zero. I tend to concur. Ah, okay, with the challenge being responded to in the way it was, got a note in from Steve saying, up my challenge to 50. Done. Thank you, Steve. Oh, yeah, there's, all kidding aside, and we can have lots of fun with ever so much more of this stuff. But what's interesting when you read these things and the little denialists and the young earth creationists and whatever come scurrying out from behind the baseboards is that they do pay attention. They do learn to mimic things. See stupid ape above. But they mimic very well. And they pick up their talking points as if they had magnets in the front of their heads or the backs of their throats. Here's Jade. No one is stupid for what they believe. And illiterate means they can't read. The term troll comes to mind for you, though, seeing as how you think no one is allowed to have differing opinions from yours. And newsflash, no, really, there's no punctuation here. It's just, you know what? I finally realized these people, they're actually classic scholars. They've studied Latin texts which had no punctuation. You just sort of had to figure it out as you went, you know, because verbs came at the end and that kind of gave you a clue, that kind of thing. And newsflash, it takes more than one country to change emissions to change China, and other countries have way more than the U.S. does, and they aren't going to change, so it really would not matter what we do anyways, besides which the scientists that are saying this is paid big money to say it, and these so-called studies y'all worship change every other year. With the addition of a little bit of punctuation and grammar and spelling, those are direct talking points from the American Petroleum Institute. Well, the United States really can't do much about climate change because you see China, and then there's India. And so if we do something about climate change and China does not, then all we have done is destroyed our economy. Which is, at its essence, a bullshit argument, because China's trying to do something. China is choking itself to death on smog right now, on ultrafine cancer-causing particulates. It has cities that look like Pittsburgh in 1900 or London in 1850, where high noon looks like 9 o'clock at night or midnight. There, that's the better one. Where high noon looks like midnight. And so they're adding wind turbines and they're adding solar panels because one of the things that China would like to be is free of the desperate search for fossil fuels. Because that means that they get a leg up on, what did those neocon Republicans call it? Oh, the project for a new American century. Well, see, the countries that get renewable energy right are going to be the ones that have a new century. So you could say that in terms of climate change, China's busting its ass to create a project for a new Chinese century. Of course, it also looks like it's going to be a new Icelandic century. It looks like it's going to be a new German century. It looks like it's going to be a new French century, a new Scottish century.
A new Canadian century. But it's not going to be a new American century because we are mired up to our loins in hydrocarboniferous goo. And it's kind of hard to march boldly into a new century when you're marching in tar sands or coal sludge or breathing methane released from hydrofracking operations. Yeah. Here's another genius who's picked up some talking points. The environmental movement has been blown way out of proportion over the last 10 years by special interest extremist groups. Somebody's watching O'Reilly. There have been billions of taxpayer dollars spent on studying global climate change with no definitive facts. The polar ice cap, once believed to be diminishing at an amazing rate, has now been shown to have actually grown in size. This person believes that all the way down to the ground because they believe it. And that means facts don't matter. This is all just straight out of Peter freaking Pan. And as long as we clap and we believe Tinkerbell, the Earth is going to be okay. I'm all for alternative energy sources like solar, wind, turbines, etc. However, the war on coal is nothing but special interest groups using politicians to bankrupt an industry that has always provided cheap electricity for consumers. This doofus wants to sound all sciencey, but at the same time, he doesn't understand that there aren't little Keebler carbon elves there under Wise County or where the hell ever that are just churning out more coal for the... See, we like to just think of our mountains, our Appalachian Mountains, we like to just think of them as a great big pimple, and what we're doing is when we mountaintop remove, we're busting the pimple and we're getting the coal zit out. That's what we're doing. Sorry, Scott. Sorry, Linda. I know it's dinner. But I mention all of that because of something I saw in my email box earlier today that just made me ha ha. You know, one of those. You know, Tom Hulse from Amadeus, that really goofy laugh that he used for Mozart. Yeah, I did one of those. Dadgummit, you want to be in Houston, Texas this evening and tomorrow. Darn it. Down to the Hyatt Regency. Because, I mean, this here's a high-class affair, and it's not like they're going to be doing it out to the super raid on the bypass. The Texas Public Policy Foundation. Oh, please, Sergi, strap in. Now, everybody else may not need the hockey puck and the duct tape, but Sergi, you will. You really will. The Texas Public Policy Foundation will host At the Crossroads Energy and Climate Policy Summit on Thursday and Friday, September 25th and 26th, 2014, at the Hyatt Regency in Houston. This summit will bring together the brightest and most eminent minds on energy and climate change to discuss the path forward from the crossroads between the transformative energy revolution and coercive federal regulatory mandates. The event will be live streamed. Yada, yada, I didn't even try. Because I'm out of duct tape and I'm out of hockey pucks. Like I said, we're serious about this fundraising problem. See, I can't use the duct tape and the hockey pucks on the air, but I have to strap in plenty before the live and the light goes on and stuff. Okay, so this is, again, the brightest and most eminent minds on energy and climate change to discuss the path forward from the crossroads between the transformative energy revolution and coercive federal regulatory mandates. And I think I'm going to need a little bit of oil and vinegar on that word salad.
Here's the pull quote. Here's the pull quote from this press release produced by our good friend Ryan Hughes at Shirley and Bannister Public Affairs. From the earliest days of the oil boom, more than a century ago, to the Eagle Ford Shale oil field today, Texas has been a national leader in energy production and innovation, Governor Rick Perry said. I refer back to that first paragraph about the most eminent minds. Hairball. With technological advances unlocking reserves once considered unreachable, Texas is leading the way toward a brighter, more secure future, positioning America as an arsenal of energy for the 21st century. Yeah. Yeah. Governor Rick Perry's one of them eminent energy minds. Drill, baby, drill! Right through the... Never mind. Speakers include Matt Ridley. Y'all can Google these people if you want to on the fly, and I'll probably be able to hear the screaming from right where I'm sitting. Speakers include Matt Ridley, author of The Rational Optimist, Mark P. Mills, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. Never mind Mark P. Mills. Just look up Manhattan Institute and see if you don't start kicking furniture. Dr. Frank Clementi, professor of emeritus at Penn State University and TPPF's own Kathleen Hartnett White. Thursday's keynote address will be given by Governor Rick Perry with introductory remarks by State Senator Dan Patrick. Now, so Dan Patrick, I know, he's not the good Dan Patrick. He's not the fun Dan Patrick. This is the idiot Dan Patrick. And he's either running for lieutenant governor of Texas or secretary of state or moron in chief or something. I'm guessing the Texas Public Policy Foundation, see, they do such a good job of picking out bland, boring, innocuous little names, when in fact the names are sort of a slipcover over an entire lunatic asylum full of, stupid apes. Just sitting there, a flinging poo to a fare-thee-well. Sessions will explore the latest in climate science. Oh, I'll bet. Current federal regulations and litigation, the history, politics, and economics behind man-made global warming. The politics behind it? Really? See, that's a tell. The poker players in the Horn Family Commune congregation will know what I mean by a tell. That's a tell. That means that the dipshit sitting across from you at the table is holding 3 of spades, 5 of spades, 7 of spades, and he's waiting to draw that 4 and that 6 of spades, and he's going to whip your ass. The history, politics, and economics behind man-made global warming, energy alternatives to fossil fuels, there are none, and how energy factors into prosperity and poverty. Bring your own hockey puck. Bring your own duct tape. Maybe I'm wrong about this. Maybe this is some sort of reasonable undertaking, but there's just something in me that says, not by a long shot. Wow, nice little crowd gathered in the chat room this evening. Bean's there, and Carol's there, as noted. Kathy and Kelly's there. M. Brandt's there. Good evening, Paul. Paul was first into the room this evening. Good evening, Ark Ellison, and thank you for the help. Good evening, Stockton Larry and Texas T and Waggy and Will in Chicago. And they're all just waiting in case you want to wander by for this Thorn in the Side Thursday. Oh. There is just a cornucopia of opportunity here, of right-wing thought. Note the sarcastic emphasis on thought. Hey, good evening, Anatole. Welcome to the chat room.
Yeah, let's go
walk about and see what the rest of the wingnut world is up to. Earlier today, of course, they announced the resignation of Eric Holder. I've never been a huge Eric Holder fan, and I really do. I hold it against him that he worked out a deal that let the Chiquita Banana board of directors skate on the fact that they knew about a murder-for-hire plot. He was defending them. That was his job. And, boy, he did it dandy good. Got people who are accessories before the fact to cold-blooded murder. I mean, they did no perp walk, no, nothing. And so that's always kind of tarnished his image, in my opinion, but his resignation was announced earlier today, and there was a press conference there where President Obama praised him effusively, and then Attorney General Holder gave an equally effusive speech. And somewhere in the middle, the Tea Party Patriots, whose motto is "Pursue Your American Dream," I thought it was "Take Our Country Back." Oh well, Michael Rudin, who is at Shirley and Bannister Public Affairs 2. You get an idea what the client list is like over there at Shirley and Bannister? Got a press release right out there. Statement of Tea Party Patriots co-founder Jenny Beth Martin on Holder resignation. And Michael Rudin's part of the press release says, "Following the abrupt announcement of Attorney General Eric Holder's resignation, Jenny Beth Martin, co-founder of Tea Party Patriots, issued the following statement." Wait, the abrupt announcement of Attorney... What? The man's only been saying for eons that he was going to knock off at the end of this year. I mean, there's general agreement that he said that. That 6 years as Attorney General, among the longest serving of any Attorney Generals in the history of this country, is enough. It's not a sentence. It's an at-will employment kind of situation. You can quit anytime you want to, but he stuck it out for a while, regardless of whether you agree with him or not. But not in the minds of the knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing, strychnine-swigging, serpent-juggling, tongue-speaking weirdos of the Tea Party. You know, the birthers, deathers, tenthers, baggers, and booger-eaters that they are. So what was actually a planned exit becomes, in the thin gray settlings that slosh around between the ears of your average teabagger and surrounds their great big gigantic amygdala lizard brain and otherwise passes for brains, it becomes an abrupt announcement. Enter Jenny Beth Martin. Jenny Beth says, "On its face, Eric Holder's resignation is a good thing. America is a better place without such a lawless partisan occupying the nation's top law enforcement office. He will go down in history as the nation's most corrupt attorney general." Now, we kind of got to stop right there, since this here is Thorn in the Side Thursday. Kind of got to stop right there. "He will go down in history as the nation's most corrupt attorney general."
Jenny Beth, I realize that maybe you're 32 years old or so and probably have the mind of a 3-year-old chocolate lab. Maybe. But I think Attorney General Eric Holder is going to have to commit a hell of a lot of mayhem between now and whenever he walks out the door and doesn't walk back in again in order to even begin to get close to a cat named John. Anybody? Mitchell. Mitchell. John Mitchell. You see, John Mitchell done went and did some stir time in the federal big over how he kind of helped cover up the whole, that whole political corruption assault on the Constitution. You know, the real one, not like the ones you imagine in your thin gray settlings, Jenny Beth. John Mitchell. Well, he just got caught. He will go down in history as the nation's most corrupt attorney general. Americans must never forget that the blood of Border Patrol agent Brian Carey is on his hands. Hey, what's she talking about there? Oh, you're fast and you're furious. Yeah. Oh, there it is. Eric Holder's illegal scheme to put guns in the hands of the Mexican cartels led to that brave patriot's death. He became the first attorney general to be held in contempt of Congress, which is fitting given his utter and open contempt for the American people and the Constitution. Okay. Jenny Beth, I understand. I understand Mama dropped you on your head right after you was born and everything. But, Jenny Beth, let me explain you something. That fast and furious that gets you so head up and absolutely gets them in a twist for you. That there fast and furious was conceived by the Bush administration. It was. It really was. I would not lie to you, Jenny Beth. And then there's he became the first attorney general to be held in contempt of Congress. Given the nature of this House of Representatives, that's kind of a badge of honor, isn't it? Oddly enough, before this story broke, wasn't it last night that, or was it, the, no, it was, no, was it last night or the night before? I can't remember. They run together. But we were discussing whence comes the Louis Gohmert casting aspersions on my asparagus remark. And it was during an entirely one-sided, unfair fight, verbal sparring between the proud son of the 1st Congressional District of Texas, Louis Gohmert, who actually wore judge's robes once upon a time, which just fills me with creeping horror and dread, and Attorney General Eric Holder, that upon being told that he was just wrong, Louis Gohmert responded, "Don't cast aspersions upon my asparagus." Which I can only assume is indication that Louis suffers from some sort of, I don't know, vegetable Tourette's. Well, and see, there it is. It's hanging up above the rim, and Carol's not going to throw points away. Oh, no. She's going to slam that thing right through the net. John Mitchell weren't no Negro. Yeah, because the teabaggers really are a bunch of filthy racists. It's been sort of out there for a while now, in case you didn't know. So, Jenny Beth,
co-founder of the Tea Party Patriots, and I don't know which group of Tea Party people this is. I don't know which bunch of baggers it is, because they splintered into a million tiny pieces. And that wasn't because of internal disagreements. It was because everybody wanted a wanted one of them Koch brothers' money checks. And they all got them. That's the fun part. Or they got a Karl Rove money check. Or an American Petroleum Institute money check. Or a Sheldon Adelson money check. And they criticize liberals for liking welfare. Woo! Anyway, Jenny Beth continues. He begun his tenure by dismissing the voter intimidation case against the new Black Panther Party in Philadelphia, and he slithers out of office having played defense for Lois Lerner by his refusal to appoint a special prosecutor. He is a disgrace to that honorable office. Which honorable office? Michael Rudin over there at Shirley and Bannister Public Affairs. You've got a reference without a back. Refusal to appoint a special prosecutor. He is a disgrace to that honorable office. I guess that they mean he's a disgrace to the office of special prosecutor, but he wasn't. He was Attorney General of the United States. What are you going to do? He began his tenure by dismissing the voter intimidation case against the new Black Panther Party in Philadelphia. You remember the case of the new Black Panther Party in Philadelphia, don't you? The one where the person standing there taking photo after photo after photo of the new Black Panther and was clearly documenting voter intimidation, somehow managed to forget to be intimidated and stood there taking pictures and didn't run screaming into the Philadelphia night because the photographer had done been all intimidated and stuff. Yeah, that new Black Panther Party. As one chapter ends in the Obama administration's war on the Constitution, Americans must remain engaged and vigilant. There's no doubt the president will try to ram through a lame duck Senate. Another part. The imagery, Michael Rudin. Another partisan hack for Attorney General. We cannot allow that to happen. Now, see, here's the funny part. And this is the real Lulu. You know, because these baggers are Otne, Ute, Itbre, if you one what I in me. Attorney General Holder has promised President Obama that he's not just going to hurry off in a SNIT or even a Lincoln Town Car. He's going to stay at his post for so long as it takes President Barack Hussein to find himself a new attorney general. And get him or get her confirmed. You know, in his remarks today, Attorney General Holder made a special point of thanking Valerie Jarrett. At which point, although I didn't get an update via email, it's entirely possible that Jenny Beth's little tiny little old mind may have just gone pop! Like one of them aliens right there in Mars Attacks with the fishbowl over his head when he starts hearing Slim Whitman. Yeah, Carol, that's worth bringing up. I mean, we talk about Obama derangement syndrome, but there's a subspecies called Holder derangement syndrome. Carol asking, did you hear that stupid woman on Fixed Noise compare Holder to the Black Panthers? Said he runs the DOJ like the Black Panthers. Which Black Panthers? Yeah, I do remember that because we had rather a good bit of fun with the audio of that. Last month, a Black Panther helped me across the street in Ferguson. You know, bloodthirsty shit like that. Hi. another partisan hack for Attorney General. We cannot allow that to happen. So if they don't let the nominee through, then Attorney General Holder is just going to sit there sharing a contempt for Congress that Congress shares for him, and I guess it'll just be a staring match between Attorney General Holder and Louie Gohmert's asparagus, which resides in his brain bucket. Yeah, and see, as far as Jenny Beth and her worst attorney general in American history, Steve pointing out, worst AG, Mr. Alberto Torture Memo Gonzalez gets my vote. Yeah, he's pretty well up there. And then you know, I mean, just for straight-up bad attorneys general, why isn't John Ashcroft getting any love? I mean, here's a man who spent tens of thousands of dollars of the American people's money to put a curtain over the naked demon titty of the aluminum statue of justice in the DOJ. Kid you not. You forgot that, didn't you? Here's a guy who made sure that there were never any calico cats near him, as they are known to be familiars of Old Nick, Old Scratch, the devil. Yeah, really. Marty pointing out, considering Alberto Gonzalez was an AG who couldn't remember the time of day if he was under oath, Holder hasn't done anywhere near enough to get the most corrupt title. And still, I'm sorry, I'm going to stand on this one, and I'll have to be pushed off this hill. Even Torture Boy Gonzalez is still going to have to work mighty hard to outdo John Mitchell. I mean, John, holy God, have we forgotten our Watergate history? Jesus, God, that man was so crooked that when he died, they had to screw him into the dirt. He managed to serve 3 years as Attorney General, and he got that gig because he served as Richard Nixon's campaign director in 1968. He did 19 months at Club Fed in 1977, which was really hilarious because he was Nixon's Law and Order AG, which meant cracking down on the hippies that didn't like his Vietnam War. Really? Now, he's the one who produced one of the more sleazy remarks out of the Watergate affair, the Watergate crimes, the Watergate conspiracies, the Watergate assaults on the Constitution of the United States. It was 1972 when he was asked about the fact that other folks were dropping the dime on him and noting that he controlled the slush fund that was used for the dirty tricks against Democratic candidates. That's when he told Carl Bernstein, Katie Graham's going to get her tit caught in a big fat ringer if that's published. And ultimately, John Mitchell and his buddy Maurice Stans tried to keep an investigation from going forward of one Robert L. Vesco, Robert L. Vesco was on the lam from a federal indictment. Now they were indicted, Stans and Mitchell, and they got off on that one. They were acquitted. But that wasn't all. Then in 1975 came the trial for conspiracy, obstruction of justice, and perjury. Again, perjury by the Attorney General of the United States of America. And that was all related to the Watergate break-in and cover-up. John J. Sirica, federal judge, reduced the poor soul's sentence to 1 year in jail. One to 4 years, that is. That's how Mitchell managed to do 19 months in Club Fed. Did it down at Maxwell Air Force Base in Montgomery, Alabama, raking the golf course. They paroled him for medical reasons. And he was so dirty all the way down to the ground that he actually participated in the meetings that led to the Watergate break-in. This is the walking, racketeer-influenced, corrupt organization, one-man member thereof, that Jenny Beth can't seem to remember. Yeah. And, yeah, Waggy noting in the chat room, but Eric Holder is obviously more corrupt because melanin. Oh, that's right, Carol. His wife, Martha Mitchell, dropped a dime on him, too. He must have been a real sweet guy. You see where we wind up on things like Thorn in the Side Thursday? Oh, and Sparky pointed this one out to me late last night. And we just can't let this one fly by because, well, if we do, then it means, I mean, I'm not giving these guys free publicity. But I don't have the stomach to let, if we are ever going to cure this country's deep and abiding misogyny problem, it starts with calling out the perpetrators thereof. It is no surprise, therefore, that we find ourselves looking to Fox News TV Radio Rwanda for a magnificent example thereof. Let's go to the audio.
Hey, ISIS, you were bombed by a woman. Oh, yeah. Hell came down on ISIS in Syria because guess what? The first female pilot piloting for the UAE, there she was, leading the strikes, dropped the bombs on ISIS on Monday night. This is really incredible. Major Miriam Al-Mansouri is who did this. Remarkable. Very excited. I wish it was an American pilot. I'll take a woman doing this any day to them. I hope that hurt extra bad from you because in some Arab countries, women can't even drive. Her nickname, per Jennifer Griffin, Lady Liberty.
There you go. The problem is, after she bombed it, she couldn't park it.
Did you really have to ruin my wife?
I salute her.
Would that be considered boobs on the ground or no?
Oh my God.
What kind of salute Jesus. Would you salute
Why
her, Greg?
Ruin my thing?
Would you give her a firm?
Did you just say what I thought you
were? Dang, I don't care who you are. That's funny. That is. Jesus criminy. And they're going to cut those two guys' paychecks this week. And next week. And the week after that. And the week beyond that. So the female voice you heard was Kimberly Guilfoyle. And this is that nightmarishly not funny attempt at right-wing humor that Fox News TV Radio Rwanda puts out there and calls the five. Because they couldn't call it five funny people. They couldn't even call it five talented people. It's just the five. We'll take the assholes as red in the title. But bless her heart, Kimberly Guilfoyle, well, okay, she's into getting her war on. It's Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, so I'll take my little victories where I can get them. And just be grateful that Kimberly Guilfoyle didn't say, I hope she bombs some little women and children, too. And blood and guts and veins in my teeth. And you want to kill? Kill! All right. And then, you know, because jokes about women drivers are so second decade of the 21st century, only they're not. Wilma, you parked the car wrong again.
I'm sorry, Fred.
Was Wilma even allowed to drive? Pyle, I thought I told you not to let Luann Poovey park your Jeep. Ha ha! Golly, Sergeant Carter, I done forget it. Hootie hoot! But if you didn't, if you thought that park the car thing was a little bit rude, do they call that boobs on the ground? Oh, I tell you what, that's funny. I mean, that's funny. Yeah, making a breastless joke out of a Muslim woman get to fly an airplane. I guess I'm grateful for some things. I mean, they showed a picture of the woman, and I guess that precluded Greg Gutfeld and Bill Bollocks or whatever his name was. From asking how she managed to fly the plane in a burqa. Yeah, surprise goes a long way. Carol just typed, yes, I said that, not you, Bob, meaning this. I'm shocked they didn't note that she was on her period when she dropped that bomb. Bitches be bombing this time of the month. Well, no, they would never do that because Gutfeld and Billy Bob there they faint at the mention of the word period. In fact, when they type, they have to use semicolons. Otherwise, they just bang their little heads on the keyboard, and Lindsey Graham has to come running around with smelling salts. Merciful sakes. Okay, I'm glad John Ashcroft is getting a little bit of love. Steve noting, maybe not Gonzalez bad, but definitely Gonzalez level weird. Ashcroft, olive oil anointing notwithstanding. No, not olive. Steve, the olive oil would have been kind of understandable. Attorney General Ashcroft. Being the fundamentalist Missouri Stan weirdo that he is, he was, don't you remember? He was into Crisco. And just that phrase alone, he was into Crisco, is enough to make me crawl, just kind of want to do the rest of the program huddled up in a fetal ball over in the corner. But he was into Crisco. Thanks very much to Marty and to Bill. The additional $25 of Steve's challenge has been met. Bill noting simply, the show is important to me. Thank you, Bill. I think it's important to a lot of people. It's just a question of whether or not we can get to where we need to be. Thank you, Sal. Sal's there. And, well, we are making progress toward where we need to be. And where we need to be is around $2,000 to wrap up the end of September and the beginning of October. So, with any luck at all, cross your fingers. And the cross your fingers part is for everybody who's already helped make it happen. If you haven't and you're able to help, don't cross your fingers. Get typing. Yeah, see, I can't either, Marty. Marty says, I can't remember Wilma or Betty ever driving, but I do remember from the Jetsons, Jane flying their new spaceship. George was blindfolded, of course. This was the 60s, after all. Jane, stop this crazy thing. Oh, the things that go on a young child's brain cells. No wonder I didn't have room for really getting algebra right down pat. But that's not all we got. Oh, no. Oh, no. We tend to make the mistake, I do, of paying attention to stories that come out of the national aspect of the news, you know, the national cable networks and whatnot. But let's not forget that there are local markets and that there are right-wing POSs occupying them. It was apparently a commercial break during the morning drive broadcast over at News 12 The Bronx in New York City when Matt Pieper, or Piper, P-I-E-P-E-R, if it's properly pronounced German, it's Pieper. If it's Americanized, it's probably pronounced Boehner. No, P-I-E-P-E-R. He gives reporter a cue that 2 minutes coming up before a piece about school crossing guards being needed. And then makes a reference to somebody named Dave. Apparently this didn't sit too well with News 12's viewers. Let's check the actual honest-to-goodness, no kidding, audio. Maybe. Come on. I know you can do it. There we go. Yeah, here we go. Kind of homemade.
Up this morning, a live traffic report showing you the latest on the roads and rails, plus another look at your weather on the Tuesday. But first, here's a quick look at the results so far to our question of the day. We're asking, what are you doing to save the planet if you haven't?
Okay, never mind.
Maybe it's just my crackling voice because I have a sore throat. Maybe that's what you're hearing. Oh, I'm getting used to this. I'm gonna bask in the ambiance. All right, Cinderella in the house.
2 minutes. And Dave wants you to also mention that parents should do their fucking job and walk their little kids to school on their own and not rely on everyone else, kind of like people rely on government assistance for their entire lives.
Did he just say that?
He actually said that. Wow. Thank you. Several seats.
Well, I actually added the part about government assistance, but it's true. I mean, how old are these kids?
I think I qualify for government assistance.
Just check that box, girl.
Oh, shit.
And since we're talking about video on a radio program, it's worth noting that he punctuates what he has just said, this Matt guy does, by picking his nose. I wasn't picking, I was scratching. You were picking! Yeah. Adjust the tie.
Hashtag EBT.
Wow.
Hashtag EBT.
Homeboy don't know. He is still being recorded. Probably his last day at work. Wow.
And then it cuts to a screen that says fight pancreatic cancer. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, don't be relying on that government assistance all your life. Because, you know, you can do that. That's what the whole welfare reform thing during those heady days of the Clinton administration was all about. In fact, the Republican Congress said, listen, we want people to be able to live on government assistance all their lives. And President Clinton responded, heck yeah. Only it didn't work that way. It is then in a now classic non-apology. The TV station responded as follows. As a result of a technical error, no, that's probably the wrong voice. As a result of a technical error during a program break this morning, a personal conversation between an anchor and a reporter was unintentionally placed on the air. The conversation included offensive language and inappropriate commentary. News 12, The Bronx, deeply regrets that this incident took place. We will deal with the employees involved and resolve the technical issues. Jesus, Carol, you're right. Ron Burgundy wasn't that offensive, and he was trying. Yeah, the story's over at rawstory.com if you want to go and find it. And just, you know, get a load of this guy. What is News 12 The Bronx? Are they anybody's affiliate or anything? Or I mean, how old are these kids? What does that have to do with whether or not there should be crossing guards? And then there's the whole issue of, you want people to, let's see, what's the word? Do their effing jobs and walk their little kids to school on their own and not rely on everyone else, kind of like people rely on government assistance for their entire lives. But what if mommy and daddy are already going to work? What if mommy and daddy are each holding down three, you know, what if mommy and daddy there in the Bronx are uniquely American and holding down three jobs apiece? And it's a minor miracle that they can get Precious Pumpkin out the door to school in the first place. Well, by God, that's socialism if there's a crossing guard. These people living on government assistance for their entire lives. Matt Pieper, you pimple. People watching your station who live in the Bronx are paying your probably outlandish salary. But what is it that makes me think that this is going to qualify as an audition tape for, you know, making it to the big time? Making it to, well, you know who? Sure. Fox. because it is Thorn in the Side Thursday. And, yeah, you know what? You know how we didn't like the boobs on the ground comment and the she can't park her airplane comment? You know, misogyny? It gets worse. And it gets worse when the misogyny is delivered by women. Is that even conceptually possible? Clue me. In addition to the five, the 962,312. There's another brilliantly named program called, oddly enough, Outnumbered. Probably should be called Outbrained. Outthought. Outstanding in their field. We don't know why, they just are. And it had to do with the colloquy on this Outnumbered program, which apparently features a woman who has found her way into our discussions recently, named Andrea Tanteros. I forget what she was stupid about. I think she was more in Monday material, wasn't she? It had to do with an article that was penned by a guy named Bill Frezza over at Forbes. And the title of the piece was Drunk Female Guests Are the Gravest Threat to Fraternities. And included in the piece was, we have very little control over women who walk in the door carrying enough pre-gaming booze in their bellies to render them unconscious before the night is through. Based on new standards being promulgated on campus, all consent is null and void the minute a woman becomes intoxicated, even if she is your fiancé. What the hell does that mean, even if she's your fiancé? If she's liquored up and you're engaged to marry her, that means you get to rape her? Even if, in our age of sexual equality, why drunk female students are almost never characterized as irresponsible jerks is a question I leave to the feminists. Enter on Outnumbered the aforementioned Andrea Tanteros and Kirsten Powers. I think this is the first official broad spectrum duct tape and hockey puck warning, but it is, I mean, it's a Cat 5, okay? Oh, that's what it was. Thank you, Carol. It was Andrea Tanteros who said that Eric Holder runs the DOJ like the Black Panthers. Carol noting her stupid cup runneth over. Oh, God. And it runneth over into a catchment basin, which has a bigger bulb. And you know, she's a fountain of stupid when you get right down to it. She are a moron. But she's made it all the way from Moran Monday to Thorn in the Side Thursday. Strap in.
I may be outnumbered, but now it's my turn with this story. After a huge social media firestorm, Forbes magazine firing a contributor over an online column in which he argued that drunk party girls are the gravest threat to the livelihood of fraternities. In the article, the writer, a president of his fraternity's house corporation, says, quote, a single out female guests for one simple reason. The number of rules and procedures that have to be followed to run a party nowadays would astound anybody over 40. Brothers who flout these policies can and will be asked to move out. But we have very little control over women who walk in the door carrying enough pre-gaming booze in their bellies to render them unconscious before the night is through. So, I am terrified of doing a segment of saying something stupid. Let's just try to identify this guy's fear here, Andrea. What he's afraid of is he hosts a party at the house, and these girls pregame too hard, and they come over sloppy drunk, They take too many shots. They go up to your room. You know, next thing happens in the morning. Yeah. You know, I don't know what happens. I could barely remember what happens.
Don't let
she
him
gets
in the
hurt.
Door in the first place.
She gets assaulted. Yeah. Anything could happen. And then they're like,
now, what's even, okay, this is the video part, and I have to do the play-by-play on this. So this guy's name is Jesse Waters, and Jesse Waters is sort of, I don't know, fantasizing through this process. And sitting to his immediate right is Andrea Tanteros, who I swear to God has a twinkle in her eye. I think she's digging this. I don't know. But she's about to interrupt.
I can barely remember what happens.
Don't let
she
him
gets
in the door
hurt.
In the first place.
She gets assaulted.
Yeah.
Anything could happen. And then they're liable. Is this a legitimate fear?
Yes, it is a legitimate fear. I don't know why this writer is taking so much heat.
Yeah.
Because this is actually a problem that goes on. These girls show up at these fraternity houses. The guys, what are they supposed to do? Lock them out? Hey, how are you? They have a couple more beers. The girl passes out. You laid out the scenario.
What, Edith, huh?
So she's already drunk when she gets there. And they let her through the door, and she has a couple more beers, and there's nothing in here about whether anybody is checking to see if she is even old enough to drink. Because, see, with the legal drinking age being 21 in all states, and it is, I do believe, that was not always the case. When I left for college on my dinosaur, Wilma, it was the legal drinking age in Missouri was 18. Whoop. Or, no. The legal drinking age in Missouri was 19. And then by the time I went home to Alabamistan, they had finally passed legal drink. And I was legal, but I was, and so, no, I mean, there was a ton of drinking in college because the drinking age was lower. And that meant that just about everybody but a brand new freshman could legally consume alcohol. That is not the case in this country anymore. If you think about the fact that most young people attending college now, you know, you become a college freshman when you're 18. You turn from 18 to 19 as a freshman. You turn from 19 to 20 as a sophomore, if you're on the four-year plan. You turn from 20 to 21 as a junior. So somewhere in your junior year, you'll turn 21, and then 21, 22 as a senior. So that means that fully half of the people at these fraternity parties, and I was a member of a fraternity, and sweet Jesus, you know, beer was consumed. But IDs were also checked. Because all it took was one bust, and man, you were off campus. Male, female, didn't matter. Because this stuff gets out of hand in a hurry, and people die. I remember when I was at West Virginia, at one point, there was one, ha, 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 oh, isn't that funny, yuck, 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 where the pizza delivery dude parked at the top of High Street, which is a mountain, to deliver a pizza to somebody in the fraternity house, and some other wise-ass, probably drunk, went out and let off his parking brake, and the car rolled back down the hill and killed someone. And you don't... And I remind people that these organizations began as debating societies among privileged young white males attending college. Yeah, and see, there's the reality. I've got I just had a tweet come through from Sandra. She says, here in California, a large number of college men didn't know that having sex with a woman who was blacked out drunk is rape. And because a whole lot of people, a whole lot of young men, boys, in fraternities are away from home for the first time, and you know, freshman year is a sort of washed out, blacked out bacchanal, you have to explain this stuff to them in really little words. Like, if she's passed out, you can't her. If she can't say yes, you can't her. And maybe, you know, for some of them, you can get into the intimate details of, there ain't a lot of fun in that. Or isn't it cool when she's into you as much as you are? Oh, you start out with the caveman stuff. You know, don't F. And over the years, governing bodies of these college fraternities have had to absolutely go sideways trying to deal with risk management. And it's difficult. Some have responded by simply saying, there will be no booze in the house. There will be no big parties. If you're going to have a big party, have it somewhere else, but not at the house. But all of these things are rather ancillary, especially in the light of people like Andrea Tanteros, who thinks that, I guess, drunk girls are asking for it? Let's check in.
Yes, it is a legitimate fear. I don't know why this writer is taking so much heat.
Yeah.
Because this is actually a problem that goes on. These girls show up at these fraternity houses. The guys, what are they supposed to do? Lock them out? Hey, how are you? They have a couple more beers. The girl passes out. You laid out this scenario very, very well. So it is a legitimate fear.
No, that's what they should do. They, if a girl can't handle her alcohol, then the person at the front door should say, why doesn't your sorority sister take you back to the house and hold your hair back while you vomit?
That would be good. But a lot of times, they walk.
Okay, before Andrea Tanteros blesses us with a little bit more of her sparkling wit and stunning mind, how many days ago was it that we had the story of the fraternity that was dropping roofies or some sort of intoxicant into women's drinks, and 911 was called like six times between 12:30 and 1:15 a.m. from women who were completely disoriented and throwing up? Because, see, that's not a function of her having too much to drink, or as this goober over at Forbes wrote, you know, showing up with booze in her belly. There is a nail polish that is out now that turns from pink to black if a young woman stirs her drink with her finger and it's got psychoactive drugs in it. That's where we are. That's 2014. Kind of makes the summer of love look a little bit benign, doesn't it? Granted, I was five and a non-participant, but you know, the hippie days when both parties would drop acid and be like, "You have an aura. Ah, you do too." But also in that era, there was also, and it happened in college campuses and fraternities and whatnot. Rape! And now the rape has gone high tech. The only answer I can come up with is to teach men not to rape. It is not an answer to say, Well, let's teach the girls to wear beekeeper suits to the fraternity parties so everybody will know that she does not wish to be raped. It's bullshit. Teach males not to rape. And don't teach what males not to rape by saying things such as were said during the last election season, such as, well, you know, son, some girls rape real easy. No, that's not teaching girls. That's not teaching guys not to rape girls. But forever and forever and forever, you've got these godforsaken right-wingers who are, you know, they are the home office of, well, we're Republicans and we believe in personal responsibility. Oh, for the love of, yeah. Can't have personal responsibility if the young lady is a getting all liquored up in the first place. Don't hardly work like that. But again, why are we surprised? You know, it's Fox effing News, radio, TV, Rwanda in the first place. Do continue, Andrea Tanteros. How would you handle it?
Walk up to guys' rooms, they get lost in the fraternity house, maybe they get drunk as the night goes on playing beer pong.
It's impossible, almost impossible for fraternities to get sued. There was a huge expose, it was a cover story in The Atlantic. And the way these fraternities have insulated themselves, I don't feel bad for them. If you're worried about liability, do what an airplane would do, what an airline would do. They don't either let drunk people on the plane, and if you've already been served, they're not going to serve you anymore.
Kirsten, let me ask you this, because I see what you're saying when they say, you know, the fraternities are under threat. I mean, this kind of reminds me of when white, straight, rich men say, we're being attacked. I mean, do they have a legitimate concern? You know, they're going after the Washington Redskins, these American institutions, you know, gays in the military.
What does the Washington Football Club's racist nickname and gays in the military have to do with college girls getting raped at fraternity parties?
Things are changing. 50 years from now, are they going to even allow fraternity culture?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know how much under attack they are, but I have a real problem that this person wrote something that, whether you agree with it or not, why does it have to be pulled down and everybody has to freak out over it? It's like, can you not express an opinion that differs and people can tolerate it? I mean, what is the problem?
Well, first of all, the writer agreed with it being pulled down.
But that's, I don't understand.
And it was posted in the politics section.
Right, but this is our culture now where we literally cannot talk.
No, listen to your buddy. It wasn't in the culture section. It was in the politics section. Aye.
Tolerate differing ideas, and the whole point of the group.
Wait, why can't, so true. Why can't we tolerate differing ideas? You know, there's one idea that says rape is bad, and there's another idea that says sometimes drunk fraternity boys rape. Why can't we tolerate differing ideas?
Public debate is that you should feel challenged, you should feel offended, you should even get upset sometimes, and then counter.
Yeah, you and I are both columnists, and it's so hard when you're trying to make a point because there's other points you want to jam into the column. I think this writer even said, look, there's also the issue of fraternity guys getting drunk and taking advantage of women.
It's
a separate column.
I guess I've been quiet because I've been listening to your viewpoints that I'm somewhat surprised at. I feel like it's.
This cannot possibly be a voice of reason. Not on outnumbered.
the fault of the fraternity that has, as this man has stated in the article, that has no policies to handle this. You just said it yourself, or maybe it was you, Kennedy. Don't let them in the door in the first place. You know, the sororities, they have sisters. They have people looking out for them. I know we did. We had a buddy system. We had designated drivers. Call somebody. Get some help. Don't let them in the door.
But a lot of times they get drunk after they're already in the door. I'm not making excuses for fraternities. I know that's how it's going to come off. There's a lot.
Yeah, it comes off that way because that's what you did, Andrea. You monumental moron.
Lot of problems. These guys shouldn't get so drunk. There's definitely an issue here. There is an issue of girls getting too drunk and men taking advantage of them. However, where's the personal responsibility for both sides?
God damn it, GOP.
Really?
Right. And I think,
say personal responsibility for women, the feminists go berserk. They're like, no, we should be able to wear whatever we want and drink as much as we want and pass out in the streets.
Well,
it's
also
like that,
yeah,
girl.
Also, it makes the drunk girl is completely clean no matter.
Okay. I want to be clear on my terminology here. Does that last part constitute a straw woman? Because where, if anybody is aware of it, I really want to see the feminist argument that has been put forward seriously, not from The Onion, that says we believe that women should have the right to dress however they want to, get fallen down drunk, and pass out in the streets. Now, the first part of that argument has been made, and I agree with it, because, you know, I'm trying to live in the 21st century of the common era, not BCE. And I think a woman should be able to wear any damn thing she wants to wear and not be treated as if she is somehow asking for, begging for, itching for sex. Because only a rape culture thinks that she is. But that combination of dress how we want, drink as much as we want, and pass out in the streets, that's a non-argument. Man, she knocked the stuffing out of that straw woman, didn't she? Here's a perspective worth considering. Steve just wrote in. Subject line, a passed out guy. I know, as a gay man, when I see a passed out guy, I realize that passed outness is clearly consent for me to have sex with him. Doesn't work the same for straights? Steve is being smart alecky. Is clearly not consent for me to have sex with it. Here's a little known and less discussed aspect of this angle. We know what happens when women pass out at things like Steubenville football parties, fraternity parties, things like that. We know how dangerous that can be. It is little noticed and less discussed what guys do to each other in the fraternity house when they pass out. And I know this is going to strike a lot of people as rather homoerotic, only because it is. But among other things, when guys get drunk and pass out, a guy who isn't drunk and passed out will whip out his penis and lay it on the cheek of the passed out guy while everybody guffaws and takes photographs. Oh, yes. Or they will get a Sharpie, because, you know, Sharpie's kind of indelible and doesn't come off real easy with even with soap and water. And they'll write stuff all over his face. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Steve notes I was being ironical. Ironical is in quotes. Marty asks, fraternities protecting themselves like the ways the Catholic Church has protected itself? Yeah, kinda. And what is that, you know, what is that line about it's almost impossible to sue a fraternity? What's that about anyway? What does that even mean? This isn't about whether or not somebody can get sued, it's about whether or not somebody should be raped. And anything except the obvious answer, no, someone should not be raped because they got drunk, is the wrong answer. Wrong, wrong answer, wrong. Oh, this stuff gets so damn tiresome. Maybe it does for you too. But God Almighty. This is a problem in this country. How do we remedy that problem if we're not first acknowledging it? I'm glad to know I'm not the only one having a conniption. Carol just pointed out. Oh, for fuck's sake. There's a cure for that, boys. Don't rape drunk party girls. Don't rape the sober ones either. That was all in caps. Women are not raped because they're drunk. They're raped because men choose to rape them. Men choose to rape them. Men choose to rape them. And see, let's say I was some multimillionaire dude on satellite radio. I know how to do shock jock stuff. I just choose not to do it because, A, the Horn Family Commune congregation is above that kind of juvenile bullshit. And, B, it's just nasty. But I know how this stuff plays, and 9 times out of 10, if you run and hide behind the skirts of, well, this is for entertainment purposes. Well, this isn't for entertainment purposes. The hope here is that we create a space in which to have a dialogue and discussion about maybe even solving problems. How do you teach your children? How do you teach boys not to rape? Let's say you've got a daughter who's going off to college. What does that talk sound like? Because, I mean, can we just say that maybe it's sound advice to tell one's daughter, stay the hell away from Fraternity Row? Don't drink with strangers? Now, that's not going to work either, because aren't most rapes committed by people whom the rape victim knows? I'm not asking these questions rhetorically. How do you teach it? I mean, honest to God, I remember going off to college, and I don't remember being told don't rape. But I also remember not having any inclination there toward. Oh, who are we kidding? I was scared half to death. Would you like to? I mean, you don't have to dance with me, but okay. Just say no. Okay, just say no. You don't want to dance, and okay, that'll be fine. Okay, I'll go back over here. Never mind. So I, yeah, maybe I don't get it. Brother. But there we have it. And I have inadvertently, entirely inadvertently, just filibustered the 2 hours of this Thorn in the Side Thursday right away. And for that, I apologize, because this is conversation radio. It's also conversation radio taking place in a rather desperate race for fundraising between now and the end of the month. I'm trying to get up around $2,000 between the end of September and the beginning of October. PayPal button or traditional mail address is fine. We've had two challenges met this evening that mean that we have we've raised in excess of $200. Thank you. And hopefully more folks will join in. Oh, let's see. Let's take a break, for heaven's sakes, and then get some conversation radio going. Shall we? This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. Nice crowd this evening in the chat room. Join in if you wish. We will take a break, like I said. The Green News Report is here. It's Thursday, which is cool. And so we'll light that little bottle rocket coming out of the break. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Show you. It's Thursday, September 25, 2014.
China's first ever pledge to cap emissions as Green News Report's special Climate Week coverage continues.
We're not getting anywhere near tackling this problem.
Environmental experts say we're just not doing enough.
The thing is, we don't have to choose between a healthy environment and a healthy economy.
Administration officials make the economic case for climate action.
And so we're now the largest private owner of a solar farm in the nation, maybe in the world.
And corporate titans step up to the challenge.
All of that stepping up and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
It's not about affecting the global temperature and climate change. There's public comments out there that that question has been asked and answered saying no.
I mean, you should look at the scientific literature rather than the public comments.
With all due respect, Representative Bousson, I suggest you get the Journal of Applied Meteorology and Climatology as opposed to the YouTube comment feed of Obama Lies 1776.
This is your Green News Report.
I didn't know we'd be talking to an actual scientist.
Okay, Desi Doyen, it has been a very big week for the climate, at least it was supposed to be before all the bombing began in other countries. But nonetheless, has there been a lot of attention in the media, finally, to the concerns of global warming and climate change?
There has been a little bit of attention, but not nearly enough. There was a big breakthrough at the special UN climate summit this week. It came from China, which is facing unrest at home over record pollution. For the first time ever, China has pledged that they will cap their emissions and have them peak and then begin falling, quote, as early as possible, maybe even as soon as 2020. That's a really big deal.
That is a big deal, although I suspect it won't stop the Republican talking points that China is doing nothing. Let me remind listeners, no matter what China does, person for person, the U.S. is still the largest emitter of greenhouse gas pollution in the world.
United Nations delegates praised the special climate summit for building trust between nations in preparation for treaty negotiations next year. And there was some progress, like new funding and technology to assist poor nations to adapt to climate change and stronger mechanisms to end deforestation. But environmental groups noted correctly that the current country pledges to cut emissions are still not enough to prevent global temperatures from rising more than the agreed-upon 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. Pledges just don't cut it, says Peter Galvin, founder of the Center for Biological Diversity on MSNBC.
Well, we should be looking for specific binding emissions cuts from different countries. And right now we don't have that. We have vague words. The European countries are a bit skeptical of committing to additional carbon reductions until the U.S. does. And so it's really critical that the U.S. actually lead on this issue.
And, yeah, climate journalist, expert turned advocate Bill McKibben said something very similar.
We're not getting anywhere near tackling this problem. And the kind of things the president was talking about today were pretty small potatoes.
And now U.S. cabinet members have fanned out this week to make the economic case for climate action in the U.S. Here's Secretary of State John Kerry.
It doesn't cost more to deal with climate change. It costs more to ignore it.
Treasury Secretary Jack Lew.
If we fail to make changes now, it will be much more costly to deal with the problem later.
Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Gina McCarthy also focused on the economic costs of climate change.
The thing is, we don't have to choose between a healthy environment and a healthy economy.
Well, the administration officials were on message this week on that score, and that's all well and good for those big government officials, but what about the guy on the ground? What about the private businessman? What about the guy who has to answer to shareholders and make a profit? Here's Tim Cook, CEO of Apple, talking about exactly that.
So we're now the largest private owner of a solar farm in the nation, maybe in the world. And so now, if you look at our corporate facilities, we're at 94% renewable. And we're chipping away at trying to get the last 6%. And it's great for the environment. And by the way, it's also good for economics. Mm-hmm. It's both.
Oh, never mind then.
And it's good for both the private and the public sectors, as EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy pointed out.
Since President Obama took office, wind energy has tripled and solar has grown tenfold. That's thousands of jobs that cannot be shipped overseas.
Right, but if they cannot be shipped overseas, then American corporations won't be able to increase their profits. And, of course, isn't that what all of the climate denial in this country is all about?
Actually, it's all about protecting the profits of just one sector, the fossil fuel industry.
For much more on that one sector and how they are screwing over your planet, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help the Green News Report stay on your public airwaves. You can find us and follow us on the Facebook and the Twitters at Green News Report. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I do love the way they DJ, Brad and Desi. 7 minutes past the hour as we wind our way through this thorn in the side Thursday. Note from Steve in China, different Steve. Fraternizing, Steve writes. Fraternity guys, not enough policing of the fraternity crowd? Gee, I thought fraternities were traditional bastions of white boys who come from privileged backgrounds and attend legacy-freighted upper-crust institutions with billion-dollar endowments, punks who consequently tend to defy the rules because they're given carte blanche to defy just about everything, you know, being insulated from the law, living behind their locked gates, and down the quarter mile of a drive to the great front door of the manor. And they snort a lot of real cocaine as well, not that cheap ghetto crack proffered to the soldiers of the many wars of drug. Mercy me, what's a college president to do with those boys? Seriously, I realize this is happening everywhere, Steve says, but I attended college after a stint in the military and didn't give a good wank about the old societies of academe. Maybe a traditional haven of the innocent and curious. Doesn't quite make sense in our times. Oh, they're anachronisms. Actually, they're not. What they originally were still makes sense. Once you knock down the walls of privilege and maleness and you start and you go back to the original ideas of debating society, studying the classics, discussing the high-minded philosophies of Cicero versus Socrates, yada, 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 and helping each other with their homework. That's a community. What they became, however, is something entirely different. Just worth thinking about. Let's go to the phone. Carol's with us. Hey, Carol.
Bob Kincaid, please report to the third floor nurse's station for your Thorazine.
Yes, ma'am. No fruit cup, huh?
Nurse Ratchet here.
No fruit cup. How can you have your pudding if you don't eat your meat?
Baby, your rants get raves. I thought that was fabulous. A two-hour filibobster, was that some sort of a record?
Oh, no. I've done three.
That was grand.
I just haven't done one in a while, and I don't know how that one really happened.
Oh, when you got that much stupidity running out all over the streets, there's just, you know, an endless supply.
Well, it's that or drinking.
Yeah,
and I'm trying. And I'm really trying to cut back on the, you know, that.
Speaking of drinking, you know, we were talking in the chat room, and I was pointing out that, you know, I went to college back in the 70s. We walked in the door of our university, got drunk, stayed drunk. Nobody raped us for the whole year. I mean, the freshman year was essentially kind of a blur between the pot and the alcohol. Nobody raped us. The boys were just better behaved back then.
Well, see, I want to be careful of going there, Carol, because I don't know if that's true or not. I mean,
no, I think it is true. I think it is true. I think that the young men in this country are being conditioned that there's a certain entitlement that comes with having a penis.
Well, let me ask you then, is that something that we can ascribe to the rise of what I consider to be the straight up, no questions asked, no kidding American fascism?
Yes, absolutely. That is exactly what I attribute it to.
Because, I mean, I really didn't get I never had any kind of a sex talk with any of my parents. Okay? They would have been horrified, and so would I.
I didn't either.
But by the same token, and I'm not going to ascribe this to the church or any, I just, yeah. Okay, I would no sooner have, just, no. I wasn't kidding. I really was the shy guy who was, you know, you can go ahead and turn me down now.
And I'm not saying that there wasn't a lot of indiscriminate sex. So this was the 70s. This was before AIDS. This was when there was just a lot of indiscriminate sex going on, especially in college. But I never heard a girl complain that a guy took advantage of her. And believe me, I would have heard it.
Well, okay, now I've said, and people may think less of me for it, I was a member of a fraternity. And I was a member of a fraternity because I started at a little tiny liberal arts college in Missouri where there were like three guys in every entering class who weren't. I mean, it's how it operated. And so I joined one. And you want to know where the problem comes from? It flows from the top down, Carol, because I remember the officials from the international organization coming in, and this would be the early 80s,
mm-hmm.
And they gave us the lecture. They gave us the lecture. We finally got one about, be careful because, I remember it as if it was yesterday, you know, y'all might have sex, and she might like it, and you might like it, and everybody consents, but she goes back to her sorority house, and she tells people what went on, and her sorority sister says, "What? You got raped?" And she says, "Yeah, I got raped." That's the way it was presented to us, Carol.
Wow.
And then the international guy says, and the next thing you know, the police are at the door. So the fact of the matter is, the leadership of the organizations have been screwing this up. Because I'm a 51-year-old guy. This was nearly, math on the fly. Yeah, this was 30 years ago. And they were making the argument not don't rape, but don't get dinged for rape. And I think that's part of how we get from there to here.
I just don't understand where this whole thing came from, where it was always the girl's fault. It was what she was wearing and where she was and what she drank. And it was never, right now, we're not having the conversation about what, the fact that rape is a choice.
No, no. I mean, it's like the straw woman that they set up toward the end of that clip. Really, I've got you on the line. Let me ask you, where is that feminist writing that says we want to dress however we want to, get as drunk as we want to, and pass out in the street and wake up unraped? Where's that argument? I mean, I'm okay with the argument, but I just don't think anybody's making it.
No, I've made it. I've made it. I've made it in writing.
You see, I think that you're right. I'm really feeling quite certain it is.
I think unconscious people have a right to go unmolested.
Yes. I mean, we had a Tales of Creepiness from West Virginia. We had a story, and I covered it here briefly a year or so, year and a half ago. There was a fundamentalist Christian lay minister who was also an MD physician in a little town in West Virginia.
Okay, that's creepy already.
All right. It's going to get worse. As a 30-something male living in that county, he gave me my first prostate exam.
Oh, joy.
He got busted a year and a half or so ago because he was trying to force his tongue down the throat of an incapacitated septuagenarian Alzheimer male patient.
Oh, my God.
Who came up into consciousness long enough to bite his tongue off.
Oh, shit. Sorry, little karmic.
Oh no, I'm glad you can. Because you know, no, for me it was more like, you know, Jesus, you know.
Yeah, but that was the guy who had his finger up, you know.
That's what I mean, you know. Oh, more Jesus, more. True story. And so, I mean, that's not just a goofy aside. That's, you know, in direct response to, and you know, to your credit, Carol, you didn't break that out according to gender. I believe that unconscious people have a right not to be molested in their state of unconsciousness.
All people.
Yes. Male, female, young, old, the gender dysphoric. Straight, gay. And you know what? That probably includes not writing on their faces with Sharpies.
Or drawing dicks, you know.
Yeah. But there's, I mean, I refuse to participate in this, oh, you know, I mean, that's just how guys are. I mean, we've been like that since we were cavemen. No.
No.
And, yeah. Yeah, I mean, back in the day, you know, there was a lot of bravado and talk. Oh, yeah, man. You know. And very, and not nearly so much doing. Somehow or another, that has shifted. Now, at the risk of channeling my inner fogey, I can tell you for sure, I absolutely despise the notion of the notion of sexting.
Yeah.
And I don't care if you're a member of Congress or an entertainer or whatever. Snapping pictures of your genitals, be you male or female, I find that to be tasteless and tacky. I guess it turns some people on. But again,
yeah.
that's one of those things that technology has brought us. You know, it's kind of an apple hanging off the tree in the Garden of Eden, if you want to go down that road. Because just think, in our youth, Carol, in order for us to provide a picture of our genitals to someone whom we favored, we would have to get a film camera,
mm-hmm.
be it a 110 or an Instamatic, or maybe if you were highfalutin, a 35 millimeter.
And it would have to be developed by somebody else.
Right. You've got to shoot the picture, and you got to hit the f-stop right, and the aperture just so, and you got to make sure that the flash is, and then you've got to shoot up the rest of the roll, or else you're going to throw away, you know, however much the roll of film cost. And you may not have gotten it right on the one shot, so you want to make sure you take it with different settings.
So if one dick pic is good, 36 is better.
Right, and then you got to take it. Then you got to take it to the photo hut, where it gets developed. Oh well, okay. Well, you know, Devin's the horn problem solver, Polaroid.
Yeah. Amen.
And then you have to physically deliver the pic. And it's not like there were front-facing cameras on cameras. They only faced one way.
That's true.
And you couldn't see necessarily, you know, unless it is, I mean, and it's a really little image through the viewfinder. I mean, that would have been humiliating enough, right?
You mean if it fit through that little viewfinder?
Yeah. And then somehow... But see, back then, if you had gone to all that trouble and then you delivered the Kodachrome to your intended, would he or she not have gone, what the is wrong with you?
Yes.
Well, where did we get to it's okay?
When webcams kind of came around, I think.
I know that something had to make it okay. Was it the fact that it was not being developed by some pimply-faced kid at the photo mat?
Probably. Because we got to cut out the middleman, and therefore it went directly to your intended. So that embarrassment feature kind of went away. Of course, not for me. I mean, I would be embarrassed.
Well right. I mean, you know, I got a note in the chat room here from Stockton Larry. In my case, the enlarger is crucial.
Well, in my case, the wide-angle lens is crucial.
Oh, we're dating ourselves, Carol, but I don't think necessarily improperly so.
No, but
I mean, it's not like I want the children to go back to doing the Tennessee Waltz or the Virginia Reel or the Minuet or something.
I don't either. Hey, look, like I said, when I went to college in the 70s, it was drinking, firing up a fatty, getting laid, but it was all consensual. I remember the last time I got really hammered. I was a freshman in college, and I stopped drinking that night. I got so sick that I decided that just wasn't fun anymore. And I got totally wasted at the bar across the way. We were having a tequila sunrise chugging contest, and I think after 22, I finally hit the deck. And
age or tequila sunrise?
And it was the guys who got me home and safely and in bed and fully clothed and made sure that I was okay. It was the guys. It wasn't my, quote, sorority sisters, not that I was in a sorority. I was the head of what we called the GDIs. Did you have GDIs?
Oh, the goddamn independence, absolutely.
The goddamn independence, yes. After all the sorority and the fraternities got all their T-shirts made, we had T-shirts made, too. And mine said Commander Quaalude across the back.
Well, I mean, this is just reminiscence, but there was where I, and, you know, what, you're maybe an hour and a half from Fulton, Missouri?
Oh, yeah.
There was my college, and then about a mile away, there was an all-women's college. Now, my college had gone co-ed a couple of years before I got there. It had been an all-men's college.
Mm-hmm.
But they still had this thing called PCH, it was personal closing hours. And it was basically the pumpkin time. And so if the young woman went to that college, you had to have her back before PCH or else she couldn't get, they wouldn't let her on campus.
Right.
And I mean, I remember a lot of drives of, you know, of making sure that the young women got home and, you know, we would drive them up to their dorms, and then we would hand them off to their dorm mates, or they would be sober enough or whatever. But again, no rape.
Right.
And so, I mean, the question is when did it happen?
I don't know when it happened, but I'll tell you, when you mix... When you mix technology with mob mentality, it gets really ugly really fast. And it never ceases to amaze me how people want to explain away the bad behavior of the boys that are involved in it and will wax poetic endlessly about everything that the girl did that got her into that situation. And that I don't understand. Because I am firmly of the belief women are not raped because of what they wear. Women are not raped because of where they are. Women are not raped because of what they drink or how much they drink. Women are raped because men choose to rape them. And similarly, men can choose not to rape women.
And you get amens on both counts from me, but I would also consider a caveat, or not a caveat, but a corollary in there.
Okay.
Men rape because they choose to rape. Men also rape because they are encouraged.
Yeah,
to rape.
That's what I was talking about with the mob mentality, though. Look at what happened after Steubenville. Those guys talking about, you know, making the video, that one long video where the kid talked about, oh, she was so fucking dead. She was so dead. She was Charles Manson dead. She was so dead. She was Jeffrey Dahmer dead. I mean, and bragging about it and laughing about it. Nothing happened to these guys. Nothing happened
no.
to these guys.
No, I remember the bit of a hissy that it engendered here. when the colloquy took place between Candy Crowley at CNN home office and the reporter woman in Steubenville, where they both sat and waxed on about what will happen to these poor boys' futures.
These poor boys, yes. These poor young men with such bright futures. And I'm sitting there going, hey, they're the ones who fucked it up.
And I do. I want to be careful with all of this because I'm prone to say something stupid. But with that clip from Andrea Tanteros back there,
yes,
whom we already know is a blithering idiot, and who, yep, you know, she, well, you know, you and I are columnists. Oh, for whom?
No, I'm a columnist.
Right. But. So I have no problem because it's gender neutral to say that this individual is an idiot. But I swear to God, I don't know if it was because she was trying, and you know, watch the clip for yourself, Carol. You tell me. Everybody else in the Horn family, you tell me. When she knows that she's about to move into her it's a girl's fault argument, and when this Jesse Waters guy is making his case of, you know, how it happens, I swear to God, she's got the beginnings of a smile and a twinkle in her eye.
Well, and then there's this false idea that there are actually two sides to every argument. There are actual equal arguments on every side of every issue. And that is just horseshit. Because not that I believe in moral absolutes, because I think that those always, almost always, come with a body count. But that's pretty close to a moral absolute, that it's not okay, it's never okay, it's never acceptable, it's never explained away. It just isn't. And I am so glad that I do not have a daughter that I'm sending off to college, because I'm not sure how I would do it.
Well, see, I do. And I mean, so some of this is real world for me.
I mean, are there convent schools out there?
I went to West Virginia University, which we lovingly and laughingly refer to as Harvard on the Mon. My college career ended in 1991 when they said, no, really, leave. And handed me a JD degree. And I've male or female, I've looked at my kids and said, I would not have you go to West Virginia University for all the, for love nor money. Mm-hmm. Because these are kids who, when the football team beats a Division I AA school like Towson State 54-0, they riot in the streets, burn couches, and put the windows out at the Dairy Queen and wind up getting pepper sprayed.
Oh, those rascals.
They try really hard, and you know, I had excellent professors, I really did. Some that were absolutely brilliant and life-changing. But there are a few of those in any institution of higher learning.
Mm-hmm.
But I think about that wee tiny little college out in Missouri, and I think, hey, you know, maybe they could go there. And this is all discounting, the nightmare ordeal of funding college now. And I think, yeah, well, you know, maybe. I mean, are they behaving any? And I think maybe I'll write to one of my old college chums who put kids through there already and say, listen, was it okay? Because I mean, there's the academics issue of how much do you really learn if you're in freshman comp with 349 other freshmen being taught by a hungover TA grad assistant?
Yeah.
That's a question. And then there's all the social stuff. Because, I mean, let's be fair here. This story and this topic was about fraternities, but that is not the, but rape is not the exclusive province of fraternities.
It absolutely is not.
And you know, there are elements, I mean, when you've got kids, you have to come to grips with letting go of kids. And that is hell.
Yeah, I would suck at that.
Oh, I'm not doing well at all with it.
Shit, I worry when I put the freaking cat out.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've got, you know, and they're asleep, and I just kind of tiptoe in and make sure they're breathing, because we've been doing that for 18 years.
Yes.
But I mean, I deal with it around here. You know, hey, Dad, you know, I'm going out with the guys. Where?
Out.
Who are you going to be with? Oh, come on, Dad. As I told you, I'm going out with the guys. You know who the guys are. Okay, but what about where? I don't know. I think we're going to go jump off a bridge down at the... Oh, what? And then there was the... And this is, you know, this is pristine, beautiful. No, it isn't. It is beautiful, but it ain't pristine. But there are some lovely areas, natural areas around here, one of which involves a railroad trestle that crosses the confluence of Mill Creek and the New River right above the dam. And there's this big, deep water area. And they go down there, Carol.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to thinking about it. And you know what? My father did the same thing as a teenager, only I'm never telling my son that.
Exactly.
You know what a railroad trestle looks like. You know,
I do.
Especially the old ones with the big metal superstructure.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So they go down there, and they jump off where the rail is, where the railroad track is. They jump off that into the water, and, you know, that's a good 20 feet. Then they get froggy, and they climb to the top of the railroad trestle superstructure.
Uh-huh.
And they jump off that. And then they tell their mother and their father about it.
Mm-hmm.
And their mother and their father begin with, "By God, we did not..." And then we have to stop in the middle and go, that's only going to make them do it more.
Mm-hmm. But all you can think of is, I didn't raise them for 18 years and go through all these sleepless nights to have them kill themselves on a railroad trestle.
Right.
Being stupid asses.
Right. And did I mention that this is not an abandoned railroad trestle?
Yeah. I come from a railroad family, and we did that exact stupid shit. We did. And one of us used to lay with our ear on the track to make sure nothing was coming. We did it. We were dumb. And I would never tell my nieces and nephews that that was the kind of crap we did.
Well, I never understood my father when he would say we would go down to the swimming hole and jump off the trestle. Because there's actually a rail trail. It used to be a narrow gauge railroad track that went all the way from the tiny town near where I live all the way down through, you know, 800 million years of geologic epochs down to the riverbed, and the New River is the second oldest river on Earth behind the Nile. And it's fascinating, and they turned that into a rail trail, but it had a couple of trestles on it, and they're walking bridges now, and I've walked around those, and I'm going, Jesus, Dad, what the hell were you jumping into, a wet sponge? And then when I found out what the boy was doing, the light went on.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, Dad, did he actually hear you? And my dad in his waning years would say, Captain, come here. Let me tell you what we did when I was a kid.
Oh, God.
Thanks, Dad. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for nothing.
Yeah.
I don't want to take this too far afield, but you know, there is enough stuff you have to teach a kid. And the problem generationally is that parents are always behind the technological advances. I mean, Jesus, it was Cicero who, in the prosecution of Catiline, hollered, "O tempora, o mores." You know, oh, the times, oh, the morals.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, he was just sure that the world was coming to an end. And there really wasn't that much in the way of technological advancement back then. So we know there's a certain commonality to it, but if you add in the rapid technological advancement, parents don't have a chance.
No.
And I don't want to sound like I'm you know, warming up my Republican National Convention speech, because I'm not.
Not with me on the phone.
No, you wouldn't speak to me anymore. But I mean, I sympathize with parents who have to deal with this.
I do too.
And, you know, because I are one. And I have, you know, where my parents didn't, I did. I made a point of looking at the boy and saying, don't rape.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and going through the explanations of what consent means. And, you know, to be fair, he responded like most teenage boys would. There was there was a considerable roll. I thought we were doing the road company of The Exorcist because his eyes rolled all the way back into his head. Dad. Oh, it's so creepy now. I get his voicemail. It sounds like I did his voicemail for him.
Oh, God.
But, and this is the sexist part of our conversation. I can teach my son. I can say to him, you know, don't rape. And and then you have to explain what rape is. And what consent is.
Yes.
What do I say to my daughters?
Well,
as a daddy, what do I say to my daughters?
My sister is a Pollyanna, and sex always made her extremely uncomfortable. So as her son was approaching puberty, he got sent to me for that talk because I'll just say it. I don't have any problems with it. I don't have any embarrassment about it. I don't have anything. And interestingly enough, Josh is probably the most thoughtful. All the girls that he's ever dated have always told me what a gentleman he is. Now, when it came to her daughter, she didn't want me talking to her daughter because I think she was afraid that I was going to be just as frank with her as I was with the boy child. And interestingly, her daughter is the one that I'm most worried about.
Well, in the larger scheme of things, you'd like to be able to look at a male or a female and just, you know, quote, what's his name, from Wham, George, and say sex is natural, sex is fun, sex is best when it's one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't just do that and leave it at that.
No.
Lottie pointing out in the chat room right now, Carol saying, but Bob, according to Rush Limpballs, you have to know when no means yes. Did you catch that clip?
Yeah, I did catch that clip.
That's what I mean when there's, you know, when I say that there's a substructure of institutional statements telling them that, well, rape is okay.
Well, and there's so much of it. That's the problem, is that there's an endless supply of these voices out there saying that kind of stuff, well-funded voices. But we don't have any billionaires backing up the horn so that we can have these frank conversations to say that this is wrong.
Yeah, and in point of fact, I think it would be valuable if we still had everything that's required. If I had 12 blinking lines here of 12 different people wanting to say, yeah, rape is wrong, don't rape. Line two, rape is wrong, don't rape. Because then it takes on the quality of consensus.
Mm-hmm.
And to the extent that we're tribal animals, that means something. But
I'd like the mob mentality to be rape is wrong, don't rape.
Yeah, yeah. But on the other hand, you know, there's a psychological dynamic at work here, and it's borne out in Flimball's no means yes. You have to know when no means yes, and that is that there has been a promulgation of, I don't know if it's a myth or not, but I'm going to call it the myth of the rape fantasy. You know, where, oh, you're the pirate. Oh, help me. You know, and I'm not trying to make light of it. You know, maybe that's how, I mean, no, that is how consenting adults play.
Yeah, it is.
But the two operative words are consenting and adults.
There's the sane part in there.
Yeah, and there's usually, you know, what, a safe word? You know, rutabaga! And none of that can happen if you're intoxicated, either self-imposed or by virtue of having been, you know. And let's not call this, you know, let's quit calling them roofies or what, poisoned.
I'm really offended by the phrase date rape drug. It ain't a date. It's just rape.
Yeah, nobody sets up a rape date.
Exactly.
You know, it's not like you got two toddlers and you set up a play date down at the jungle gym.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, I know. We're gonna need to have.
Oh no! I feel like I need to shower with bleach.
Exactly. That's exactly where I was going with that.
And I guess, you know, I guess I've missed out on a lot of other fun stuff out there this evening, but this issue really does mean something to me because, I got daughters and I got a son.
Yeah.
And
the important thing is to make sure that they're neither the perpetrator nor the victim.
Now, let us do a little bit of probably bullshit false comparison here, Carol.
Yeah, oh yeah, because you know how tolerant I am of that. Go ahead.
On the one hand, you've got Rush Limbaugh, who could not be removed from the air if he suggested that, you know, toddlers, female toddlers, should be having sex.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, let us back up a moment to the Ray Rice issue.
Yeah.
If for no other reason than I like to praise people who, or at least note people who attempt to get it right and do so fearlessly. Now, the hissy that was had in that Fox News clip, Carol,
mm-hmm.
was about a guy from a fraternity's house corporation who wrote some really sleazy shit, and then the thing was pulled. Well, with regard to the Ray Rice issue and the larger issue of the ongoing, absolutely unbelievable denial by Roger Goodell that he had, oh my goodness sakes, I had never seen that there video.
Uh-huh.
There's a guy over at, and you have to subscribe to it, ESPN's Grantland.
I saw it.
And he did, his name's Bill Simmons.
Was he the one who called Roger Goodell a fucking liar?
And he called Roger Goodell a fucking liar.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't just say, he said, for all these people to pretend they didn't know is such fucking bullshit. It really is. It's such fucking bullshit. For him to go on the press conference and pretend otherwise, I was so insulted. And ESPN had to get out the smelling salts.
That's right. And then they suspended him for 3 weeks.
Yes.
Without pay. And yet, Stephen Smith from ESPN can stage a nutty on air.
And it was.
And talk about these crazy bitches from the National Organization of Women, these harpy bitches who got Ray Rice suspended indefinitely, ruined that man's career. And I'm sitting there going, you dumb son of a bitch. Ray Rice ruined Ray Rice's career.
Well, yeah, and the Stephen Smith thing is the ESPN Sports equivalent of Candy Crowley and whoever that woman was talking about those poor boys having their lives ruined.
But there's no recriminations for what Stephen Smith said. This was a week after he sat there and lectured women about taking responsibility in their part of domestic abuse, to not sit there and antagonize their man. And I'm sitting there going, listen, you dumb son of a bitch. The only thing some women have to do to antagonize a man to get themselves hit is to have a fucking pulse.
Yeah, breathing. Breathing. Yeah.
But this other guy gets 3 weeks because he didn't toe the NFL party line and called Goodell a fucking liar?
Which
he is.
Which he is. Please. Oh, Well,
I'm tired of people being punished for telling the truth.
Right. And of course, nobody's going to suspend Andrea Tantaros.
God, no.
But on the other hand, you know, somebody like my buddy Mike Malloy points out that tornadoes tend to hit the Bible Belt harder than anywhere else. And you know, lib talker prays for God to send tornadoes to hit Christians, and all hell breaks loose.
Oh, I know.
I mean, there's a double standard here. You could drive a semi tractor trailer through sideways. And frankly, Roger Goodell is a liar. The world knows. I think the world knows he's a liar. And anybody who's defending him at this point in time is doing so because he's getting a check.
I want to be clear. Roger Goodell is a fucking liar. That guy got it right. He did.
Yeah. And the best part of Mr. Simmons' rant was, I really hope somebody calls me or emails me and says I'm in trouble for anything I say about Roger Goodell. Because if one person says that to me, I'm going public. You leave me alone. The commissioner's a liar, and I get to say that on my podcast. No, you don't.
But I love the guy.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, he makes kind of a career out of saying inflammatory stuff.
I wouldn't know anything about that.
Nor I, but there's in the story I'm looking at, I guess he's got a history.
I wouldn't know anything about that.
But the ESPN statement of punishment is choice. We have worked hard to ensure that our recent NFL coverage. Oh wait. The reason cited was journalistic standards. We have worked hard to ensure that our recent NFL coverage has met that criteria. Bill Simmons did not meet those obligations in a recent podcast, and as a result, we have suspended him for 3 weeks.
Yeah. Well, where were Stephen Smith's journalistic standards while he was lecturing women on their culpability and getting the shit beat out of them?
Well, see, that falls within journalistic standards. You got it.
Because sometimes you got to tell the bitch twice.
Right. Just doesn't know when to shut up. Oh, this is funny. Lib in South Carolina just wrote in and said, I'm listening to you and Carol, and I glance over to the TV and I see Bob Kincaid in a promo, all in on MSNBC on October 6th, a show about coal. So, oh, wow, that's kind of cool. but, yeah, that just to divert for a minute, that series, All in America Coal, is going to run the week of October 6th. And
is that going to be on Chris Hayes' show?
Yes.
Awesome sauce.
There will be a segment every evening, and there's an awesome little promo out, and I'm in like second. I'm at the 50-second mark. I measured. No enlarger necessary.
Mama like.
Yeah. I
love Chris Hayes anyway.
I do too.
He is one of the smartest people on cable TV today. Scary smart. That guy.
Well,
he and
Rachel formed the Scary Smart Block.
I know, but I mean, I have total gay crush for Rachel, but seriously, Chris Hayes makes me get my nerd on really bad. And it's good. It's good. That guy makes me think. I mean, I sit there and I watch him talk to people going, okay, what's the takeaway here? And they're sitting there talking and he's frantically writing down notes while they're talking. This is a guy who doesn't just talk. He knows how to listen.
Well, and he knows how to do both at the same time and do it all on the fly.
I know. God, I love that guy.
And I can tell you just based from the personal experience I've had, because I've been going back and forth and consulting and talking, and they are trying so hard to get this absolutely nailed all the way down to the ground perfect.
Yep.
And so that's why I get a little bit crazy when people hand me the false dichotomy of, well, there's Fox and then there's MSNBC.
Yeah, that's bullshit. Because there's no Joe Scarborough equivalent on Fox News. There's no liberal, you know, voice.
And there's no weekend of prison porn on Fox News.
That's exactly right.
Unless you just call that, you know, their ordinary, you know, program lineup.
And I might add that Fox News is free of charge on every basic news,
yes,
cable.
It's Jesus free Network, Trinity Broadcasting, yep. You know, Jesus 2, Angel 1, Revolving, Evolving, Blessed Mary Channel.
And Fuck Noise.
Fox.
And if you want MSNBC, you got to pay extra.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So when they tell me about how much bigger their audience is, I'm like, screw you.
Well, yeah, that's cheating because, I mean, Carol, that's the same model that obtains in over-the-air terrestrial radio. For instance, you know, the guy who went to the Dominican Republic on an all-boys weekend with a bottle of illicit Viagra, you know, Flimball.
Yeah.
He'll say, I've got 5 million listeners. And there's no liberal that can compete with me. Well, that's deliberate because if you put the blithering junkie on a 50,000 watt clear channel, and that's a technical term, not the name of the corporation,
yes,
a 50,000 watt clear channel blowtorch, and you put the liberal on a 5,000 watt daytime only flickering candle flame, the numbers are going to reflect that. But what's really fascinating, if you compare apples to apples, and this goes back to my buddy Malloy, mm-hmm, back when he was at WLS in Chicago,
yep,
he was on one of those 50,000-watt blowtorches.
Yep.
And he raided the bejesus out of the right-wingers. I mean, took them out and beat them like they owed him money. Beat them like borrowed mules. And so, you know, our side can win. As long as the right wing doesn't have its thumb on the scales. But in the meantime, you try to get a liberal on terrestrial radio.
Mm-hmm.
Or, and I know you do some driving. By the way, was the vet fun?
Oh dear Lord Jesus, it was fun. 66 Corvette Stingray.
And what color was that red?
Is that, like, not the most gorgeous? It was a deep burgundy color with black leather interior.
I mean, it's like it was almost like a really dark garnet.
Like dried blood?
Yeah.
Yeah. And
Or candy apple coating that had cooked too long.
Yeah, yeah. And it was a four-speed manual with a 350 under the hood.
Oh, how did you even keep it in the, you know, just not go sideways when you shifted gears?
Who said I did?
Yeah.
You know, I work for once a week I go in and there's this old dotty right wing millionaire that lives down in the Country Club Plaza in Kansas City. He's getting older. He wants to divest himself of his antique car collection. He used to steal my heart. He used to own the car museum here in Kansas City. And so there's all these beautiful vehicles that I get to drive and move around and take down to the car show down at Bartle Hall. And I mean, when you're driving a 1929 Isotta Fraschini 8A Roadster that's worth $1 million.
Quit it.
And you go driving into the big overhead doors at the convention center and 1,000 people are standing there like agog. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I do once a week.
Oh, I'd see if I couldn't do it twice.
I'm helping him sell off his collection. But in the meantime, I deal in car porn on my Facebook page.
Oh, that thing just got all over me. I mean, it was like, I was once dear friends with a woman who would get hives if she was holding a diamond bigger than 1.5 carats.
Oh my!
I looked at that Corvette and started itching.
The only one that I can honestly say that I loved driving more than that, he's got a 1931 Cadillac V16 with that V windshield, a convertible, and oh my Lord, I love that car.
Oh. Ouch.
$450,000.
And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to just divert us off into car porn, but I saw that and was just
It
reduced me to roughly the same state I was in when I was telling the young woman at the dance that she could go ahead and say no.
Well, you know, Bob, I'm a giver.
Oh, my word.
He's sitting there going, don't go there. And on that note, I'm going to let you do your fare-thee-wells and close your show. I did not mean to dominate your final, you filibobster for 2 hours.
You didn't. It was fun, and I love it. And you know, this is, I keep telling people, this is what conversation radio is all about.
Yeah. But you're like my right brain, and we can talk and go back and forth and dissect things and look at it from different angles.
We could have done this for a couple more hours
without getting insane. Yeah. So,
well, yeah. Carol, you have yourself a lovely evening.
I shall, and good night to all my dear friends in the chat room. They were wonderful tonight. They had me laughing like crazy.
And I'm so glad that Sparky was able to get you in there.
He the man. Sparky, you the man.
He is indeed. Carol, have a good evening.
You too, love. Talk to you later. Bye.
That's our pal, Carol Baker. You can find her on Facebook. Oh, for the love of God, if you love cars, find her on Facebook and look at that vet. Oh! It is time to roll on out of here. Thanks, everybody, who have kicked in to help get us out of the bind that we're in here as September verges into October. And, you know, I didn't mention it, but there is still something really cool on the table. Sparky's $100 Ghost Pepper or Pistachio Challenge is open to you for a $100 contribution. And I recommend, I mean, the pistachios are wonderful, but I recommend the Ghost Pepper cheese. It's to the extent that cheese can be, it's life-changing. Yum. And fiery. And, yeah, I still got to make the grilled cheese with the sourdough. Oh, my. So just let me know if you want in on that, and give me an address to ship it to, and it'll go in the mail. So we're out of here. Friday on the front porch tomorrow, hot diggity, and we'll be trying to get we're trying to raise in the waning days of September $1,700. We knocked it down a little bit. Thank you, one and all, who helped in that. Thank you to Steve and Dr. John for the challenges. And thank you, one and all, for responding to them. Thank you, Lib, for jumping in toward the end of the program. It's all very important. Thank you. And, away we go. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the Horn chat room, moderators for a very long time now. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox in Australia, to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHEACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.